Okay, it's October 27th, 2006, and I'm David Brooks, the interviewer for the University of Montana's Oral History Project. I'm doing the second part of a two-part interview with Commissioner of Higher Education, Sheila Stearns. Ms. Stearns, I was hoping you could start out by talking a little bit about what your relationship as the Commissioner of Higher Education is with the University of Montana in particular. Projects you work on that are UM particular, or the people you tend to work with.
Okay, thanks, David. As commissioner, of course, I work with all the 11 institutions that the Board of Regents directly governs. But the two largest are the University of Montana and Montana State University. So I do work probably the most with the two presidents. So in the case of the University of Montana, the person I visit with the most or consult with or who consults with me is President Dennison, by far, you know, far and away. There are times, certainly plenty of times, that other people in my office will, for example, the chief fiscal officer in my office will connect very frequently with Vice President Bob Duringer, or, you know, the chief human resources person in my office will connect frequently with Rob Gannon in UM's human resources office. All of the chief officers at UM are people that we consult with. They ask us for advice. We ask them for advice as we try to, you know, they have immediate responsibility, primary responsibility for the University of Montana and its set of campuses, whereas we have that responsibility not for operations day to day, but for general policy and facilitating governance for the board, for all of the institutions. So I meet often with President Dennison, as we just discussed. I came from his office. I do come to Missoula quite frequently because of family here. So I would say I talk on the phone more frequently with President Gamble of MSU, but I actually see President Dennison in person more often, because and often on a Friday afternoon, because I'll come early enough to see family. So we cover a range of issues, and there may be, usually I would say two-thirds of the time it's President Dennison raising an issue to me, and one-third of the time it might be me raising an issue with him, a question about one of the UM campuses. It could be about budgets, it could be about personnel, it could be about a policy change that the university needs, it could be, and frequently is, about some initiative that the University of Montana, obviously in particular President Dennison, is considering. And he and I will visit about what is this feasible? Is this, you know, what under which policies? How do you bring it forward to the board's attention? What would be the best way to do that? Does it make any sense? You know, is it an innovative idea, but maybe could never have legs? So we visit, you know, quite a bit, because I see part of my role is to help campus executives, particularly the two that report directly to me, and that's George Dennison and Jeff Gamble of the two flagships, to encourage them to be innovative and to, you know, have, frankly, I hope, you know, a lot of rein, you know, to run their institutions. But, you know, nobody in the public sector, and that includes any private corporation that's traded on the New York Stock Exchange, nobody in the public sector has total rein. You know, they have to check in with their board of directors, and in this case, that's the Board of Regents, and I'm their chief staff person. So, and, you know, chief executive. So it's through President Dennison, by and large, that I interact in terms of how to help, how to advise, how to get out of the way, whatever is needed.
So you mentioned a few times the words innovative and, you know, give them as much rein as possible. Have those been your, if you can say, guiding philosophies or your goals in relating with the university system? Or do you have anything that you would call guiding goals?
I would like to say that's been my guiding philosophy for the, this is going on into my fourth year. I would say initially, you know, it depends on the board of directors, the board of regents, the particular group you're working with. You know, it has changed. They change every year, and then there were a couple of resignations, so it's particularly changed. I believe that when I first arrived back in the state that first year, that the Board of Regents was in some ways interested in innovation, and in other ways still feeling its way about did they want more control or less control. And frankly, I need to reflect that to a degree. My personal philosophy that I think is ascendant now with the Board of Regents is that they share it and perhaps in some ways have discerned it from me and in some ways have encouraged me to develop is for flexibility in the ways that matter, for management flexibility for campuses to be innovative, creative, but at the same time not to be innovative in ways that don't matter and only interfere with accountability. And I'll give you an example. A number of years ago, the state legislature and the Board of Regents, in effect, decreed that all the units in the university system would be on the Banner software administrative system. You know, the informational technology software. That was somewhat troubling to Montana State University Bozeman, which had already begun to invest and had thought it wanted PeopleSoft. But it was determined that which software package you use, really, that's not a way you needed to be unique. You know, and if you had too many kinds of uniqueness, then it would be impossible for the Board of Regents to be accountable to the executive branch or to the legislature or to the public, because you'd never be able to pull the data to compare, to track trends across the whole system in a consistent way. So that's an example. There are some areas in which the board have said, no, we don't expect creativity in some basic areas. You know, find the ways that are unique to your mission, but that will not, you know, stymie accountability, tracking of basic information in an organized, coordinated way. So yes, I would say it would always have been my preference, but it's only in the last year or so that it is probably a prevailing philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, you mentioned your personality is sort of ascended in your role to guide the Board of Regents. Is that a philosophy that is just something that's part of your personality? Do you get that from other university systems, any other universities in particular, other comparable boards of regent? You know, I guess what are your influences in doing that?
A little of each of the aspects that you mentioned. My preference, whether it's within my own family, with people I work with colleagues, has always been to have individuals be just as smart and independent as they can be. And that includes now in the position I'm in, you know, that the chief executive officers that I work with. It was also true when I was a college president with the vice presidents. To frankly, it's almost lazy. I mean, it's in the sense of if I have to look over every single decision a vice president was making when I was on a campus, then I would be way, you know, I would have to work 80-hour weeks instead of 60-hour weeks, and you know that. There was plenty. So part of it's my own preference. And part of it is the changing winds of the preference of a board. Some like more control. Some like are very content to be at 50,000 feet instead of 15,000 feet. And part of it is learning on the job. I've learned a lot in 3.5 years that it's really best that, you know, at least try not to control very much. I just have to be accountable to the board and make sure they're well informed. So I think, and then I've observed good examples in other institutions, my colleagues across the country, and I pay close attention and stay in touch with those that seem to me are doing a particularly good job, and I hear that from their presidents. So, you know, to say, they have great respect for their, you know, state higher education officer, and I say why and try to learn from that. So it's a blend of all those influences mm-hmm. that you listed.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the initiatives or innovations that you've seen in your 3.5 or 4 years as commissioner on this campus in particular that are noteworthy?
Well, some of them may have been mentioned by President Dennison in his interview, because there have been several recently, and we actually, practically in honor of the University of Montana and President Dennison's sort of wide-ranging experience, things such as planning for expansion into the South Campus, planning to, for a couple of years now, of possibly extending the University of Montana to China. So those are two. I mean, or a third one, perhaps the indexing of fees for auxiliaries, so that you would not have to go back to the students every single year for kind of a vote from the Student Senate, you know, if the Student Senate agreed that, consistent with keeping them informed and with the inflationary pressures, you know, so just various, whether it's relatively small but an innovative idea to be more efficient administratively, or whether it's a big issue, such as should we have a campus in China,
mm-hmm.
or an outpost, or whatever you'd call it. So those are some examples. But mm-hmm. this campus, more than I would say almost any other one in the system, and I attribute that to President Dennison's long experience in higher education, and at the University of Montana in particular, to have the confidence, you know, and he's well-read, widely read, you know, so he comes up with lots of ideas, and I'm sure he censors a lot of them himself, but some come forward to me, or we talk, or he'll say, we have this idea, we've looked at it, he doesn't bring half-baked ideas forward,
mm-hmm.
not to my level, but he'll say, what do you think, what should we flesh out, you know, do you think, you know, so those are just some examples.
Mm-hmm. You know, not that he doesn't do plenty of other things, but I think most people recognize President Dennison's legacy so far here at the University of Montana in the number of new buildings and, you know, physical structures that the campus has gained. How involved are you in that sort of building of the campus? Because it's certainly, I mean, it's going on right out the window here with a new
yes.
journalism school. There's talk of buying a golf course up in the, I think, Highlands Golf Course now,
yes.
or building on what is now the University Golf Course. How much of that are you involved with?
President Dennison consults with me very quickly and in any depth that he wants or I feel I need in order for us to keep the board well informed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not involved in starting it or stopping it. What I am involved with is facilitating. Our office, by statute, or at least by board policy, is expected to prioritize what is called the long-range building plan
mm-hmm.
for all the universities. So every major building project ends up on a list every 2 years that the legislature, the long-range building committee, looks at. And that's everything goes on that list with an estimated cost, only if the Board of Regents approves that it goes on the list, even if it is going to be privately funded. So in that respect, I am very involved, and so is, or at least especially as a member of my staff, the Associate Commissioner for Financial and Administrative Affairs. So there's not one major building project, and even the minor ones have to be signed off on us. But the big ones all come to our office,
mm-hmm.
and from us to the board, and from the board to the legislative long-range building project committee. So we talk them over. The university might lobby for something that might get state funding to be higher in the pecking order than perhaps a new education building on some other campus. Why? When we would like a science building on on the UM campus. So, but most of that angling and the making the case for the need goes on to my staff members. I'm kept informed about it. If I agree, usually if the architects have agreed and my staff have looked at it, you know, it's not, I'm not going to be out there one looking to see the possible blueprints. Mm-hmm. So I'm very in with all the building. Either I or in most cases my predecessors mm-hmm. said, well, great idea, A, or B, not so sure, probably won't be ranked very high, or C, you know, the only way you'll ever get that is to raise the money for it yourself, in which case the president sometimes will say, want to try that anyway, and the board will generally say yes to that, and just puts down there, it's at the end of a list that says authority only, meaning you have the authority to go out and raise the money and try and build it, mm-hmm. but go find the money. And that was the Don Anderson Journalism mm-hmm. building was an authority only, primarily maybe 90%+, mm-hmm. maybe close to 100% privately fundraised. So in that, my office is very much, I'm very much involved with that, mm-hmm. or expected to have some responsibility for the oversight of the building plans.
So, I mean, by definition, your office is in this really interesting position of being between the state legislature and executive branch and the university's executive branches. And, you know, you've got the funders and the spenders that you're working
exactly
between.
You've described that very well, and it's by constitution, mm-hmm. the state constitution, that we are in that spot. And I think the 1972 constitution put us in that spot because of how difficult it was for previous governors and legislatures to sort through that without a body such as the Board of Regents with considerable, in other words, constitutional clout. Mm-hmm. To be there mm-hmm. and to say, the legislature can always look at a long-range building list, let's say, that the Board of Regents has prioritized and say, well, you know, we are the ones who appropriate. We're going to move building number 5 up to first priority if we have blank dollars to spend. But they don't usually, because now as then, pre-constitution, they know they don't, in general, have that expertise. And they're pretty wary about flexing political muscle. They try instead, if you're from the Butte legislative delegation, to work with the Billings legislative delegation or the Missoula legislative delegation to say, you know, maybe we could flex some muscle, but maybe it's best if we convince, you know, the rest of the legislators who would really like that new building in Butte at the Tech campus right now, that you wait your turn. Mm-hmm. And that the process that the Board of Regents uses under the authority of the Constitution was established for that exact reason.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Tech schools did get a bunch of money out of the last legislature. But, you know, aside from buildings, when I follow the legislature, when it comes to the university issues, things stick out for me that probably are, and you know better than I, that, you know, your job is not always probably particularly easy, or it's not always celebratory issues, you know, things getting approved. There are plenty of things that don't get approved, no doubt. And I'm thinking in particular of, you know, this university has had to defend its environmental studies program, forestry. It seems like things that deal with the environment here at this school, they've had to justify curriculum uh-huh. many times to the uh-huh. legislature because of, and I, this may be simplistic, but because of the strong lobby for traditional extractive industries in the state. That seems to be the two sides of it. Uh-huh. Whether that's a simplistic analysis of it or not, what I'm getting at is, what are some of the difficult situations you've been put in being between these two bodies?
Okay.
UM in particular.
Right. I will say that, you know, as you've expressed it, it's a very interesting issue, and as you said, admittedly simplistic, because that's what shows up in the press. Mm-hmm. Our office would certainly intervene. I think you said something interesting. You said our office or whomever getting between the legislature and perhaps inappropriate meddling in curriculum. at a campus. What has generally happened, and I've observed this long before I became commissioner, is the attempt, and there's a real key difference here between a few legislators, legislators, rather than the legislature as a whole. And generally, my office, working with representatives of a campus such as UM, if its environmental studies program has, or some of its students, or a few of its faculty have done something to ruffle the feathers of a couple of legislators, that you will intervene in the sense of generally trying to defuse it, to explain, you know, they do have the right of free speech, they can write essays, they can, you know, just because a student chains herself to the federal courthouse on some issue does not, frankly, reflect on the, or have anything to do with the curriculum, and really, legislatures cannot. And so it's just an education communication. And frankly, once in the early 90s that the budgets come to the Board of Regents in what they call the lump, it removed the, it had pluses and minuses, but a real plus was that it removed the ability of a legislator on an appropriations committee to go in and take away, let's say, $400,000 for the environmental studies program. They could never, even pre-1991-92, have targeted environmental studies, but they could have said, we're so frustrated and we think we can get enough people to vote with us, we'll try to remove that dollar amount, in effect, to punish UM. And maybe that will motivate their president or whomever to make those people be more civilized or, you know, politically correct from their perspective. Right. So, but, you know, that has happened very seldom, because they cannot affect the line items of individual campus budgets. So the complaints are as they should be, at a higher level. They are with a legislator going to see President Dennison and or Bill Johnston, the lobbyist, who then will say, you know what, Senator, some of our faculty in that particular discipline would love to visit with you, and they set up some interim conversations, and they end up visiting that fellow's ranch, and it all, you know, you turn it to your advantage using communication rather than any other way. So that's more how it works. I am in a position plenty of times to go with campuses when they're celebrating. But you're right. More often, my office is called in or called, you know, by a complainant, by someone, whether they're in an elected position or a citizen or a parent or a student, when there's a concern. And we generally diffuse them and manage them quickly, and it, as you know, get them back to the campus where the people can really deal with it as soon as possible.
So earlier you mentioned in your conversation about the software and MSU wanting some unique software, and perhaps that not being where they should be unique. But in saying that, you said that you use that software, or having everybody on the same page, to compare and to track trends in universities. What have been the trends that you've seen in this university or in the system that you've been interested in as a commissioner of higher education?
My job on behalf of the Board of Regents is to track global issues as enrollment or percentages of resident students to non-resident students, budgetary trends, cost of education trends. Are they going up at the research universities and staying stable at the two-year units? So they're kind of macro trends in terms of managing the overall university system and therefore defending to policymakers, the governor, citizens, and legislators, that the money is being well spent, even though it's millions and millions and millions, because they always think if there's that much money, there just has to be change just falling through the cracks and waste. You know, I mean, I think that about the military, mm-hmm. you know. And yet, if I were administering a little office someplace, as I knew someone who did with the military, then I could see how Spartan was that little office and how they struggled to get there. You know, maybe the waste is someplace else, but our job is to track trends so that even if you see, let me use the military analogy again, a $600 toilet seat, that you know overall, to change back to the university system, if you're spending $9,500 per student, and that's been the trend, it's been going up slowly, no faster than the rate of inflation, maybe a little faster, but is it? Then you look at the trends compared to the higher education price index, not just the consumer price index, to find out is that trend defensible. But if you're spending $9,500 per student, and the other 14 states in the West to which you're most comparable, that their universities, which are most like yours, are spending $11,500 per student. The macro $50,000 foot trend shows you that while someone may see, a custodian leaning on a broom for an hour when they think she should have been working, and aha, this is the reason our tuition's so high. Mm-hmm. The trends enable us to show, get away from the anecdote and look at the overall metrics, because then you know, quite frankly, most of your expense has to do with good people mm-hmm. in a knowledge economy. And you can show that if that's what you're spending, then you have to be at a disadvantage in competing for faculty or specialized employees at any level, whether in the computer center or for a provost for the university. They're high demand, they're mobile, they can go anywhere in the country. If you're only spending $9,500 and 80% of your budget relates to personnel, you may have a big problem, and you probably do, especially as the baby boom employees, primarily mm-hmm. faculty and staff, begin to retire. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have to have the software system, not only so that the board can track it, but here's another important factor, is so that the executive branch and the legislature trusts you. If they cannot, monitor this as well and see that you're comparing apples to apples across your campuses, then they begin to think you're making it up. Mm-hmm. Or you could be. Or a campus could be fudging. Mm-hmm. So having the data be as clear as possible, as transparent as possible, is one of the areas where, frankly, it's just best you're not too unique. Mm-hmm.
You know, one example that I think people were asking those very questions in your time as commissioner and my time here has been the audit of the university's athletic department,
yes.
which was, I believe, just 2 years ago.
Yes.
Can you briefly describe that, and what has become of that?
Yes.
What was that issue?
Yes. That was an issue that the board 3 to 5 years earlier had said, let's not run any more negative fund balances. Now, in the general fund areas, you always had to, balance your budget. But in the auxiliaries, you could in some, let's say your residence halls, have a bit of a surplus 1 year, and the other area could have a bit of a negative. And your job as the executive was to balance it out. And frankly, anyone who runs a big business kind of knows that there's some areas that you watch the if you've got the Ford dealership and you're losing in marketing but you're gaining in whatever, you watch it, you try to get to balance. The board said we never want any negative fund balances. That may or may not have been a wise decision, but they made it. That said, then they gave the universities a couple years to get their athletics, both the a couple of them had, UM and MSU had some negative fund balances going. They were balanced with positives in other areas of mm-hmm. their non-general fund. The university, President Dennison asserted after 2 or 3 years that they had it whipped. They were balanced. He was very pleased and proud, and he should have been. And then they discovered that they really, he really felt, and I think he's right, that he was misinformed by people who didn't mean any harm, but were not as on top of the finances as they should have been. That what they had solved for 1 year, but they still had not solved the structural expenditures to stay balanced. Mm-hmm. So that was what was discovered in the middle, early of 2004. And secondly, then as they dug a little deeper, they realized that an accounting transaction that should have been recorded in 2003 was pushed over July 1st. Was it a mistake? Was it intentional? I'll never know. Was it really malevolent? I don't think so. But it created enormous distrust mm-hmm. for a while of President Dennison himself, but of certainly the athletic director and the whole enterprise, the fiscal side of the house at UM. Mm-hmm. And so I really think it certainly wasn't a molehill, but it need not have been a mountain. Mm-hmm. But some of the initial reactions and information caused it to catch fire. And then my office needed to step in to regain trust with the Legislative Audit Committee and with the Board of Regents and others, and empower an independent panel with some UM folk, but mostly non-UM folk, to look at what happened and to verify, was it inept? Was it deceitful? And, or somewhere in between mm-hmm. in that continuum. And I think that the panel did, I mean, there's a book, you know, an inch thick that explains their findings. Mm-hmm. And it was primarily well-intentioned people not making particularly good decisions. Mm-hmm. So they got that sorted out, made their plan to correct it. They had 5 years to correct it. They corrected it ahead of schedule. And, it was resolved.
You know, this is something I should have asked President Dennison as well, because athletics is one of those things that plenty of people, when they look at a university or educational system, think maybe that's extraneous, or how is that important to a university or educational institution, you know, which this primarily is. And knowing that you're a Grizz football fan, yeah. Answer that question for me anyway. I mean, how, from a commissioner of education standpoint, is a big athletic program at a large university important?
I definitely want to distinguish that from my being a Grizz fan.
Sure, of course.
Okay. if I were to design universities and university systems in this day and age, maybe even 50 years ago, I would not probably do it with athletic programs. I think they've grown up organically with mm-hmm. the colleges and universities in this country. And anything that grows up and is part of the culture, part of the organism, you know, it, to cut it off, it can be done. When I was at Chancellor of UM Western, I closed down wrestling. Oh, you'd have thought that I, and there are people to this day in Dillon who will not speak to me. So it is part of the cultural connection to both the local community and the community broadly defined. Mm-hmm. One or two of the people who won't speak to me are wrestling coaches far out in eastern Montana. So community broadly defined in mm-hmm. the whole state. So that's I think there are plenty of positives that well-run programs that have all the controls in place to really emphasize academic integrity for those athletes. You know, we sometimes overuse student athlete when we know why many of those students came to the University of Montana. They came to play basketball or football. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, let's be honest. But our job is, you know, being that is the way that the culture has evolved, to make sure that they use that opportunity given to them to earn educations and become terrifically good educated citizens, just like the rest of our students mm-hmm. who have other extracurricular activities. So I think that It does create a sense of community of many colleges and universities that is very positive. And it does enable lots of students to bond both to the campus. The graduation rates of student athletes, at least at a place like the University of Montana, is higher than the student body as a whole. They finish in fewer years than the student body as a whole, and they have a higher grade point average than the student body as a whole. So there are, I mean, we just, what we wish, what I wish, is that we had more things that this, that same broader community would put money into, give scholarships to, pay to attend, to help us to help a lot of other student groups bond that closely with their institution that enables them to get maybe a little bit more academic advising, maybe a little bit more TLC from a group of friends. So, you know, athletics have grown up organically in this country. I think if we were to go back 100 years and reinvent everything, knowing what we know now, we might not connect ourselves so closely to athletics. But here we are, and there are plenty of positives, including for the students themselves. So there it is.
So, you know, earlier I asked you about your relationship with UM in particular and your work on things with UM. What, as of right now, after 4 years, or better yet, what, you know, down the line, do you hope people will look at the university and see your handprint on? Will really be able to identify and say, yeah, our commissioner of higher education at the time, Sheila Stearns, that's her.
Really, if I'm doing my job well, most people in connection with any one of the particular universities won't say that. If I'm doing my job well, they will say, President so-and-so did a great job. And one of the reasons he or she was able to do a great job was because there was a supportive, relatively wise commissioner who helped get initiatives through or helped blunt criticism or helped redirect it or whatever. You know, so I should be a background person. The credit should go to the chief executive officer. I really believe this. I hope that the presidents and chancellors I work with believe this. I should be a background figure that very few people would know that this good thing might not have happened if my experience or my wisdom or my common sense did not help that chief executive officer make it happen.
Well, we have the longest president serving at the university right now, which you're in on at least the last couple of years. So
yes.
We can certainly see your hand there if that's what you're trying to do, is help presidents be successful.
Oh, yes. That is my goal. And interestingly, for President Dennison, it was my goal from the day he came, even though I don't know if we talked about this last time, that I was a candidate when he became president.
I don't recall us having
for,
that discussion.
For that
no.
presidency. And I was a finalist. I was a little young and a little green. I think they picked the right person. Thought, you know, I was disappointed not to get it, but I certainly thought, you know, when I saw his credentials that, yeah, that makes sense. And he was secure enough to keep me on as vice president. I think there are people who might have been hired who would have said, I don't want someone that close to me as a VP who wanted my job. But if you know him, and I think you do a little bit by now, he's a very confident, you know, wise, experienced chief executive. And right from the get-go, although he had not been a president at that point, I think he knew that or he would at least know within a few months or a year if he could really depend on me to do the same thing that I'm doing now as vice president, and that is be kind of behind the scenes to help him be the best president he could be. Because if you have a really good president, then you have or chief executive officer, chancellor, whatever, then you have pretty much a successful university. So from 1990 to 93, when I was vice president working for President Dennison, to these last few years when I've been a commissioner working with President Dennison, my goals have been the same. At least for those, you know, in the interim, I was in a different role, and that is help him be as successful as he can.
What, you know, the other thing you mentioned when we were talking about tracking trends was making comparisons. What in the our university system in Montana, how is the University of Montana unique in the in the university system of the state, if not universities at large?
The University of Montana is unique in the system because of its sort of history and respect in the state. It for so many years, the Montana State University was just grown immensely and which was a fabulous institution, but for first half of the century, it was a little bit in a shadow of the university over in Missoula. Well, MSU has certainly come into its own, but that history of the university's sort of kind of educating a lot of the professionals, the pharmacists and the journalists and the lawyers and, you know, the foresters, has given it a sense of, I mean, it has given Montanans a sense of pride in it and awareness of the ascendant role it plays in Montana being a place that is attractive to the educated creative class in this country. And there's a new book by Florida called The Creative Class. And you know, the University of Montana and now increasingly Montana State University, because it gets a lot more of the science research dollars. And, you know, as the century went on, and certainly now into this century, science, technology, math, engineering certainly has helped MSU. But the University of Montana, and now its role with the pharmacy and allied health sciences, you know, its growth there, the forestry, I just think my sense of it across the state is, and partly this relates to having a president with 16 years of experience, well-respected across the country. Occasionally, you know, someone's disappointed in the press or something with one of his initiatives, but has just given a sense that we have a first-class university in this state. And then they think about it and they think we really are very lucky we've got two first-class research, teaching, creative universities in this state. But the University of Montana, and maybe it's my bias with it being my alma mater, has a special aura there, and I think it's across the state.
Mm-hmm. So from your sort of bird's eye view of the university system, where are we headed?
The university system is, more than most people realize, the engine for the state's future. Economically, culturally, and therefore increasingly politically. The knowledge age, the information age, we've always played a strong role there, but I see that future governors, the current governor, immediate past governors, believe that the university system is about as important an organism, an entity, as the state has to achieve goals to make the state more and its citizens more prosperous, more healthy, more engaged and involved, more fewer problems, you know, prison problems, you name it. College going rates and the presence of strong higher education across the state are the best indicators and predictors of a strong state in almost every measure that you could measure strong. So I think the university system in this century will play an even stronger role in Montana's destiny than it did in the last century.
And how long are you going to be where you are, helping guide it?
I have no idea. I just had my 60th birthday.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you. About 6 weeks ago. And I love my job. And this will be my last formal job. I mean, but there are, so what I need to decide is if there are, if there's a book I want to write, or if there are causes I want to push, or if there are women and children's issues that I want to pursue, then I couldn't, you know, it would only be because other, you know, I think maybe you don't live forever, and you mm-hmm. should decide when you still have time to do some of those other things that tug at you. And I don't know if that would be 2 years from now or 5 years from now. I all due credit to President Dennison. He is, I believe, 70 years old. I think he's at least 10 years older than I am, or about 10 years older. I'll tell you this, I will not still be drawing a paycheck from the University of Montana when I'm 70 years old. I may still be working for it mm-hmm. as a cause that I love, but as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. I will not be formally working probably beyond the next 5 years or so.
Would hear him tell it, he may still be working when you're done.
He then. May, exactly, yeah. I wouldn't surprise me.
He indicated, he didn't give any indication of slowing up or
Oh, he's
or
not
stopping.
At all. Well, I hope I didn't indicate that I'm slowing
no,
up or stopping.
No, not at all, yeah. Not at all.
But no, I'm...
Changing, perhaps.
Yeah, I may make a change in a few years. Mm-hmm. I will not work for the university system right up into my 70s, mm-hmm. Much as I love it. I may, as I said, as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. But in that way, I would say that President Dennison and I are different.
Great. Well, I really appreciate your time in doing this. If there's anything else you'd like to share, other memories or thoughts that we haven't covered, I'd invite you to now. That's all I have in terms of questions for you.
Well, you know, I used the word destiny a few moments ago, and I do think that the destiny of the state of Montana is very linked to the destiny of its colleges and universities. And I just think that point can hardly be stressed enough. We are life-changing. And particularly for individuals where that matters, but also for whole communities, and ultimately it's being realized for the state as a whole. States such as Massachusetts or California or North Carolina, when they've really invested in their university system, it has changed their destiny. So that is what is my vision mm-hmm. that I help our presidents and regents continue to do, to help knowledge and wisdom change, you know, through a place like the University of Montana, change lives as it changed mine, to give opportunity as it gave opportunity to me, and therefore to just change the face of the state for the next century.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.